Dillon versus Clackamas County.
Mr. Berman. Mr. Berman, please unmute yourself.
I should be unmuted.
You may proceed.
We can hear you. Good morning, Mr. Berman.
Good morning. Should I begin?
Yes, please.
Thank you. May it please the court, counsel. My name is Leonard Berman. I represent the plaintiffs in this matter, William Dillon et al. Versus Clackamas County, on appeal from the granting of summary judgment for defendants in a case involving strip search policies in the Clackamas County Jail, most specifically daily hallway strip searches and one specific mass strip search on October 11, 2012. Due to alleged exigent circumstances. And plaintiffs assert that there is a plethora of genuine issues of material fact in this case that precluded summary judgment by the court. And specifically as to their policy, both state and federal, the policy itself is constitutionally infirm based on the language of 25.47.4 C2D. Unclosed searches are to be viewed by 1. Staff members conducting the search, 2. Staff members working in the area, 3. Other inmates being searched at the same time. And evidence in the case shows that female deputies, female inmates, closed circuit television broadcasted in the hallways daily, non-exigent circumstances, strip searches of 5 to 10 men at a certain period, after which they instituted separation stalls, which were also infirm because there were only three-sided stalls, and both other staff and other inmates could walk by and see naked inmates.
Mr. Berman, are we talking about both the return from court searches and the emergency strip search, or what are we talking about here?
Well, as to the emergency strip search, I'm talking right now, Your Honor, about the daily policy of Clackamas County, return from court or what have you, just in general, which apparently applies to all strip searches, and I presume as well the emergency one. But as to court wants me,
counsel, let me clarify. As I understand the appeal in this case, the return from court searches, you're raising a challenge to the policy and the way it was conducted. But as for the October 2012 search, you're not challenging a policy there. You're challenging whether there was, in fact, an exigent circumstance and the way in which that single search was conducted in response to that exigent circumstance. Am I understanding the appeal correctly, the way you framed it in this case?
Yes, Your Honor. However, I see them both under the umbrella of the same policy of unclosed searches and who can view them, and seemingly authorizing both the return from court and the exigent, quote unquote, exigent search, because mass strip search, the policy is an umbrella for both. So I don't see that. One is routine, one is allegedly exigent. And yes, I'm asking the court to determine whether that what was viewed and what was alleged was an exigent circumstance requiring what transpired in the video, which appears to be an orderly and non-exigent circumstance for mass strip searching of outside of cells instead of inside of cells and taking people in and out from them. The alleged weapon or contraband was missing for days or weeks with no harm to anybody. It wasn't like there was a bomb threat or a gun or a knife or drugs or
medicine. So now you're talking only about the emergency.
Correct. That's the emergency. Correct. But in both In both cases, it's the policy and how it was implemented. Yes.
That's okay. Let me.
Just a minute. Judge Pius has a question.
I want to take you back to what you said right at the outset, which apparently is at the heart of your claim, and that's that female deputies who monitor the screens in the monitoring room are able to see these strip searches. Is that right? Okay. What evidence is there that shows that female deputies regularly and consistently and are on duty in the monitoring room when they're looking at the screens viewing these searches? What's the evidence?
Your Honor, the evidence is, Your Honor, the declarations of Mr. Love, Mr. Dillon, all of the plaintiffs are in their declaration. They would stand in the hallway, and there is a big window staffed only by women who hand out the paperwork for the inmates, and they would see them live on a daily basis from that window.
Know, your argument, you started out by focusing on the camera.
Right.
Okay, I'm asking you, what evidence is there that shows that women were in the monitoring room viewing these searches on the cameras, not live?
Yes, Your Honor. Okay. As for the cameras, the deposition testimony of Jennifer Freeman was that the female deputies could and did see routinely strip searches on the 9 monitors throughout the facility as they were going on, and that was available and did happen per her testimony.
So does that evidence show that they were in there regularly and, you know, at all times in the monitoring room watching the screens?
It shows that on a regular basis they were being viewed by the screens.
Regular basis could mean, you know, like for 5 minutes a day, or it could mean hours a day.
Which we would argue, Your Honor, either one would be violative of the rights of the inmates. 5 minutes or 5 hours, Your Honor.
Okay.
They have a right not to be viewed by female deputies, female inmates, or other staff. Male or
what's the evidence that female deputies were in the hallway or doing the laundry or whatever that shows that on a regular, consistent basis, they were able to see the strip searches?
The declarations of the plaintiffs state that they would regularly be in the hallway. They would see female deputies go by. They saw female inmates go by. They saw female inmates doing laundry down the hall, catching glimpses of them, watching them strip searched from their vantage point from the laundry room. And so they were able to see them. And that is in the declarations of Dillon, Love, Hodges, Browey, and all of those plaintiffs. That is their testimony of the female staff and inmates seeing them on a regular basis with no encumbrance whatsoever.
I thought, counsel, that the evidence showed that out of 47 deputies, only 7 were female. And so just when you look at the numbers, they very infrequently were in the control room where the cameras were rotating. Is that not the record in this case?
Whether it's the cameras or live, Your Honor, the testimony is there were 9 screens that were viewable by female deputies, whether in the control room or at other stations on a regular basis, and had views of naked inmates there that they did see. And Jennifer Freeman stated that they did see them on a regular basis, and they were able to, and this was violative of their privacy rights, Your Honor, under state and federal law.
Counsel, turning to the search on October 10, 2012, you're not contesting that there was an exigent circumstance, are you?
From plaintiff's perspective, there was no exigent circumstance that required the mass strip search in the hallway by Clackamas County. It was a pretext.
A piece of metal broken off from a computer, if I recall correctly, that could be fashioned into a weapon is not an exigent circumstance in the jail setting?
Your Honor, the piece of metal was never found. The piece of metal was never...
Sure, but that, but how is that relevant to whether there was an exigent circumstance?
It was relevant to an exigent circumstance, Your Honor, because there was not a mass threat to the institutional security of any of all of the inmates or any of the inmates that while it was existing for a week or 2 weeks in the jail, it was not an emerging defuse a bomb or some other ricin or something that posed a mass or individual threat. And so there was
I have a very hard time understanding that argument. You have a piece of metal that could be formed into a shank. That is a risk of harm to someone.
Right. It's a risk of harm to someone, yes. And so therefore, a search can and perhaps should be done in an orderly fashion with one inmate in a cell and one mate outside the cell with guards there so that they can assure that they are out nowhere to be found. And if that is done properly, then there is no a constitutional infirm search. However, why they have to be done in this mass setting under those circumstances, under the existing facts, it doesn't rise to that level of exigency, Your Honor. So the search can and should happen in a different fashion, in a more protective of their rights fashion, Your Honor.
And with respect to the emergency search, what fashion would that have been?
As I said, Your Honor, they could have a guard on the inside doing searches in each cell and a guard on the outside watching the inmates and swap them out in a very timely fashion so that each one is naked only with the guard in the cell privately and exposing himself only to the minimum necessary, not to other inmates, not to other guards, not in a public free-for-all. And that would have taken a negligible amount of time, resources, or effort to timely search all the inmates so that they could be all vetted for not having the contraband. But that exigency in their mind didn't warrant that constitutional protection. And
how do we know that this manner of doing things was available?
We know this because the video shows it was available. We know there is staff available to swap them in and out of the cells. And we know that it's available on a daily basis. They could have put people into private bathrooms or rooms. And they indeed did that in the past. We know they could have put in stalls to protect.
Where do we find that on the record?
That's in the record, we believe, under the Captain E.B., his testimony, and under Jennifer Freeman and Trainer Thompson indicates that they did not have at one time had what they considered to be public privacy, and then they got more privacy after they put in the stalls, and he cannot explain why the previous privacy was upgraded.
But wouldn't the stalls have cut toward the return from court searches?
The stalls pertain to the return from court searches, yes, but there's no reason the stalls with proper four walls could not have been used by lining up all the inmates and putting one in individually each time into the cell, or four into the cell, into four stalls, and doing them that way and then releasing them accordingly. There is nothing preventing that from happening as a reasonable alternative to mass naked strip searches, Your Honor. There were a multitude of other options for them to do to prevent there being a mass strip search, even with the so-called exigent circumstances. It was a negligible amount of administrative or time to protect their rights, Your Honor.
How do we know this?
We know this because the video demonstrates the ability to go in and out of the cells in a two-step three pace a distance and swap them out. It's evident there and it's available. It's not controverted by the county that it couldn't be done. It was just not chosen not to. It was an option, not an impossibility or a non-viability.
Would you like to save the remainder of your time?
Yes, please.
May it please the court, counsel. I'm Sean Lilligren for defendants. I'd like to focus my argument on plaintiff's Fourth Amendment claims and then turn to the district court's decertification of the class action status.
Well, maybe you could address some of what Mr. Berman has said about the evidence. The possibility or probability of female guards witnessing the searches being more than incidental. What do you have to say about that evidence?
Given the standard here for the court, the law requires under Florence for plaintiff to come forth with substantial evidence. He's brought nothing but attorney argument on that issue. The reality is that there was the theoretical possibility.
Well, he claims that the Jennifer Freeman deposition demonstrates that the female guards could see the searches on more than an incidental basis.
That's I understand what you're saying, but the record speaks for itself, and that characterization is not accurate. It's at the excerpts of record 55 is the exact place in the record where Deputy Freeman's transcript is provided to the court for its reference. You can see there that she says it's theoretically possible that could happen, but in fact it doesn't. Anyways, that might the record is limited to the speculation or confirming that in theory it's a possibility. But what's missing from the record entirely is any demonstration that that was some sort of policy, practice, routine basis. There's nothing in the record to show what frequency or if that ever actually occurred. All the record is filled is with speculation, sometimes by the attorney himself, and sometimes the witness for the county confirming, yeah, that theory is possible. But the law requires more.
I just wanted to make sure I understood the exhibits that were attached to Captain Eby's declaration. He attached some photos and a map. And the map was at supplemental excerpts of record 59. Do you have that? I just want to ask you.
I have 59 in front of me now.
Okay. So as I understand it, where it says the vehicle Sallyport on the left, and then there's a hallway. That's the hallway that we talk about. Is that right?
That's correct.
Okay. And then the REL is the area where the searches took place.
Yes. Well, there's two places, Your Honor. The alcove.
And the REL.
Correct. Those are the two locations, not the hallway itself.
Well, if you read Mr. Love's declaration, he says, well, I was, searched in the hallway.
Right. So I think, clarify what's going on there. In the hallway, that's where there currently is a privacy panel. There's five stalls. That's in the hallway.
Where it says privacy along that.
That's exactly right. Okay. Privacy indicates where the panels were installed in May of 2013. So to the extent there were hallway searches, they were only as a matter of policy, pattern, practice with the panels present. So that's why it's not even theoretically possible that there was some sort of inadvertent observation of the male searches.
That would be with respect to live viewing, but I guess it's there are cameras in that hallway, correct? Yes?
Cameras are present, yes.
Theoretically, if somebody were in the control room, a female, they could theoretically see what's taking place in the hallway.
That's correct.
Okay. But we don't know how many times or how frequently women were at the control, in the control room monitoring the cameras.
Right. We don't have an exact, no, there's nothing specific other than what the record shows in Evie's declaration is if there's a low frequency of female employees at the jail, I believe it, 7 out of 47 or so. And so the likelihood, especially given that the small number of female deputies have to primarily focus on the female inmates, it's not likely that we're gonna have extra female deputies available to go to the control room to observe.
Okay, I have two last questions for you on this. The allegation that the female deputies who were doing the laundry, I gather that took place as you round the corner where they had the bin to stack the laundry. Is that right?
That's right.
And so what they're claiming is that the female deputies could theoretically look around the corner and see searches taking place.
Right, that's the argument. And the response from the county is that that's not supported by the evidence. It's a theory, but it's not even a reason.
Okay.
The reality is that the deputies call out when they are about to conduct a group strip search. And so everybody knows in that area of the jail what's about to happen. Female inmates doing laundry are not by themselves, they're supervised by another deputy. And so they are supervised literally around the corner out of any sort of view of that strip search when it occurs.
Okay. Now, my last question is with respect to the alcove. There was a claim that there was a door there at the end of the alcove, as I think I understand the concern. There was a window that allegedly somebody could see through, and that eventually that window was covered up, and then the door was replaced with a wall. Is that correct?
That's right.
And it's the area of the alcove that butts up against the booking.
Correct.
Okay. All right. Thank you. I understand.
Yeah, literally a wall in 2011 is the year, and a metal shutter covered the window since 1999. That's the history is to that theory.
All right.
So it's another one of the many theories that objectively reasonable juror could never conclude. Even with all the inferences to plaintiff, we just don't get there. We're left with speculation. There's two overriding principles throughout all the cases regarding Fourth Amendment jail strip search cases. As to jail administrators, the court must provide substantial deference. As to detainees, they have the burden to offer substantial evidence showing an exaggerated response to security and operation conditions. Jail administration is a difficult task. The U.S. Supreme Court has recognized that there's a separation of powers interest. And this is an area where you exercise judicial restraint, especially for local facilities like this. This deference to local jail administrators presents a heavy burden for the detainees who bring claims in this jail strip search context. But what does this deference and heavy burden really look like? What does that mean? The Supreme Court in Florence in 2012 answered the question pretty clearly. In the court's review of a suspicionless visual-only strip search of new detainees at a county jail, the majority in Florence deferred to the opinion of the local jail official over plaintiff detainee evidence of conflicting opinions from several professional organizations. Organizations like the National Sheriff's Association, the American Corrections Association, all were against this idea that the searches should be without suspicion. other correctional facilities were cited by the detainees, showing that those other facilities, like ICE, Marshal Service, they required reasonable suspicion. The Supreme Court decided that the detainee had not brought substantial evidence to overcome the deference owed to the local jail official. The local
I'm having some difficulty understanding you, but no deference is owed with respect to the actual facts of a case, is there?
There's
deference owed as to whether or not someone could actually see someone.
The facts and the law they're applied, right? You can't do one without the other. And in the context of jail strip searches, under the Florence guidance, under the Bell factors, yes, the deference of the facts and the law is substantial to the local jail administrator.
But not the fact of whether or not A saw B, there's no deference though there. It's what the significance of A seeing B was.
Yes. My point is this. If the opinions of the professional organizations and the practices of other correctional facilities were not enough evidence to overcome the opinion of local jail official in Florence, then plaintiffs here with their self-serving conclusory declarations with nothing else other than attorney argument, that's not enough. That's not enough evidence. And so
that's not what Mr. Berman claims he has here. What Mr. Berman claims he has is evidence that A actually did see B. So and he believes that he gets to the jury on the fact that A saw B.
The evidence you're referring to are in the declarations of each of the named plaintiffs. They're identical, not exactly, but substantially identical. They're conclusory. That's not enough. That sort of evidence is rejected by this court for a summary judgment. Conclusory, self-serving, the declarations present more questions than anything else because they're so bare bones. So I understand that the evidence, that's the argument. But my point is that here, that those declarations of plaintiffs is not enough because of the nature of their declarations being conclusory.
Okay, well, even though I admit I haven't been able to find it, he points to the Jennifer Freeman. I can find the deposition. I can't find what he's pointing to. But the Jennifer Freeman deposition says that A saw B.
Yeah, that's excerpts of record 55 for your reference. I can read it to you if you like.
But I'd like you to, please. You know what page it's on?
Keep in mind, this is one page out of a much longer deposition, but this is what I think Mr. Berman might be referring to. Okay, the question is, okay, and my understanding is that any deputy at one of the control posts on the laptop could watch contemporaneously closed circuit TV events happening. Is that correct? Yes. And are they broken up into like different views? Yes. So if one of the views has naked inmates being strip searched, they would be able to see that. Yes. And that could also be a female deputy looking at a naked male inmate, correct?
Yes. That's okay, so why doesn't that get Mr. Berman to the jury?
It's speculative. It could snow tomorrow in Portland, but that's not enough to go to the jury. A lot of things could happen in the world. And what the summary judgment requires is the plaintiff to come forth with non-speculative evidence that's not conclusory, that shows that they might have a case here. And combined with the legal standard that I told you about with substantial deference, there's not enough here for anybody to find in favor of plaintiffs. Unless there's further questions to the court, I ask you to affirm the district court, because the district court here got it right.
Thank you, counsel.
Your Honor, Your Honors, there is ample evidence that not only have plaintiffs put in their declarations being viewed by other female inmates, female deputies, other guards, the staff, Captain E, said it was possible in the hallways to see naked inmates at that time. Trainer Thompson said for 7 years they could be seen in the hallways with closed circuit television. Jennifer Freeman, in her deposition, says they could be seen in hallways and by video by females and other staff. And the policy on its face is prima facie unconstitutional and as applied. And we pray that you will reverse the trial court's decision.
Thank you. Do you have any evidence of anyone saying, I actually, of a female guard saying, I actually saw a male inmate naked?
We have the testimony, Your Honor, of Jennifer Freeman saying that female guards did see the videos and did monitor these inmates on 9 different screens and did see them. Did she say, I saw X inmate? Do they know the identity of the inmate, like eyewitness? They don't know that. They didn't say that.
Does she say that she saw?
She says that as staff, the implication is, yes, she was one of the many female inmate staff that saw the video on a daily basis and saw them in the hallway when this was done in the hallway. Yes, they are walking through the...
That wasn't my question. And you've answered my question. You said implication. Thank you.
Thank you.
All right. Thank you very much, counsel, both sides, for your argument. Matter submitted.